Hello, this is Sue Toms. I'm the book review editor at the Grand Rapids Press, and this podcast interview today is with Jean Alicia Elster. She is a Detroit children's author, and she has a new book out, Who's Jim Hines, which was a Michigan Notable Book of 2009, and I'm going to let her tell you about the story. It's based on some family stories.
Exactly. It's my grandfather's story, actually. Takes place in Depression-era Detroit, 1935 to be exact. And the main plot revolves around my uncle when he was 12 years old. It's a coming-of-age story as he learns about the racial realities of Detroit in 1935. But my grandfather owned a wood business. It was called the Douglas Ford Wood Company. And the crux of the business is they would go to the auto factories. And at that time, everything was delivered in these huge crates. So he and his truckers, his employees, would go break down the crates, pack them up in their trucks, and then come back to the wood yard, which was half of their backyard. And he had a big donkey saw. That's what they called it. It's what the lumber guys used out west. And he would cut it up into pieces big enough to be used in wood-burning stoves at that time. And those would either be used for heat or cooking or both.
Now, when you grew up hearing about this business,
yes.
You heard a lot of stories about that and your grandfather's grandparents' life during the Depression and your mother's life at that time. And you heard a lot of stories about it. And at what point was it remarkable to you as a kid? Did you recognize how rare it was that your grandfather was able to run a successful business, employ a lot of people right through the Depression?
You know, we heard it so much, and we heard so many stories, especially about how the business thrived during the Depression. And he literally helped a lot of families feed their families, a lot of mm-hmm. workers feed their families at that time. And my grandmother, she kept the books. You know, she was the bookkeeper of the family and took the orders, answered the phone. And, you know, she would talk about all of the orders they would have to last through. It was a year-round because people used the stoves for cooking. Awesome, not just for heat. So we heard about it, but we really took the story for granted, you know, as you sometimes do when it's your own family and you hear it.
Sure, sure. And by the time you wrote this book, you've already had a successful series of children's books out, JoJo in the City.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what was the moment where you decided, wait a minute, this story in my own family will be an awesome children's book?
Right. Well, actually, it's because one of my aunts had a stepdaughter who came into the family as a teenager. So, of course, she did not hear these stories growing up as my cousins and I did. And so in her 20s, she was in her 20s, and she called me up, and she's a very successful children's book author. I'm not author, illustrator in New York City. And she called me up, and she said, you know, I just heard the story about Jim Hines. And she said, that would be a great children's book. And it took an outsider, so to speak, to hear the story fresh, because we had heard it for so often and heard about the business, for me to realize, yes, this would be a good story. So I needed
story.
That nudge.
Yeah, you had a great story right in front of you all
yes,
the time,
exactly.
And suddenly you realized it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, we're not going to give away the mystery of who is Jim Hines here. I don't think that's the mystery that drives the book,
mm-hmm.
And we'll let the readers figure that out. But I wanted to ask you, how did you go then turning this family story and collection of memories from different people into this book? What did you do for research?
Well, I took a lot of oral histories in addition to what I heard as a child growing up. Usually during family reunions or, you know, holiday dinners or whatever, I would sit down either with my uncle or one of my aunts and just get some more history. I usually would ask the same questions, but you just get different aspects of it, or one sibling will remember something else more vividly than another sibling will. So, and usually it's what I call lines of time. I would hear just one line, such as the beginning, when Doug Ford, it was his chore of the siblings, it was his chore in the morning to start the wood-burning stove. And he told me, if you didn't start the fire, you didn't have hot oatmeal for breakfast. And just that one line, I changed it to no fire, no oatmeal. And just that one line really helped me kind of explode the rest of the story and all of the other things, having ice cream on Sunday mornings, homemade ice cream, their neighbor next door, Mr. Yablonsky, playing the accordion, playing polkas on Saturday night. And I remember my mother telling me they'd watch him from the kitchen window into his kitchen window. And she said he'd be sitting in the kitchen playing the polka all night long. And just that one line, I kind of just, you know, exploded that one into a chapter. So I took these different lines of time and just then fictionalized just how I thought the rest of the story would be.
Yeah, I was wondering, what did you then add into the story? How did you elaborate mm-hmm. on that? How much did your imagination play?
Most of it, my imagination did, except that as I read back now, they're all kernels of, the basis is all true. But, you know, I just elaborated. One of Doug's friends has a limp. You know, I kind of added that. I don't know if Doug's friend had a limp or not, but, you know, I added that. Some of the things that the girls would do, the sisters and Doug would do, just because, you know, I am the parent of two kids, even though they're older now. But, you know, you just know how your kids interact. And I just kind of took that back to 1935 and the kind of things they would do, kind of fun they would have back then. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's true. I mean, obviously being set in the Depression in 1935 in Detroit, there's racism and there's hardship. Mm-hmm. But I think what comes through more clearly even is the warmth and the closeness of the family and also the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, the setting in Detroit is wonderful. That comes through really clearly. How did you or why did you choose to focus, kind of shift more on that?
Well, you know, we've always had a very close family. Even now, I tell people that ours is one of the few families that I know about where the cousins were raised to love each other like brothers and sisters. And so I thought that was important to portray that and to kind of portray the roots of that so that even if you don't know my current family story, you can see where it came from. I also, the neighborhood was unique in that it was multiracial in a time when there was severe segregation in Detroit. It wasn't by law, but by tradition, it did take place. And the neighbors got along. They helped one another. My grandfather hired his Eastern European neighbors as well as his black neighbors. And I thought it was important to show that side of Detroit's history that may not be known as well as some of the other sides that may not be as nice, may not be as pretty. But the part that I portray in Who's Jim Hines, I feel is just as important to know.
Very good. I think in this historical fiction, it is a different time, it is a different era, but I think kids today can relate to the story.
I think they can, and I do a lot of readings at schools, and I bring what I call my bucket of tricks, and I like to kind of show them, you know, I bring up a model Ford F-150 from now and kind of show them the difference, you know, between that and the Model A pickup truck that my grandfather used. You know, I have a empty half gallon of Breyers, and I explain how the ice cream, you know, making homemade ice cream was the only way you got ice cream in those days. And I think kids are pulled into that. They're interested in that, to know that life is the same, but life is very different. Yeah, and during that time.
And as a parent, like you said, mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. looked like you were looking for ways to really make kids today relate to the story.
Sure, mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's wonderful. Well, I would love to have you read an excerpt from your book for us.
And I'd like to very
Thank
much.
You.
This is from the chapter, and it's called The Ice Cream Machine. But Doug gets a lesson in the racial realities about the union life at that time.
Okay.
Doug's family had guests most Sundays. Sometimes they came by to use the telephone, but they always arrived late enough in the afternoon to be offered a bowl of homemade ice cream. They'd eat their ice cream slowly and talk far into the evening. It seemed to Doug that they always talked about important things. Doug followed his mother back outside, his arms full of bowls and spoons. She sat down in the chair by the bucket. She had a large scoop in her hand. "Girls," Mayfour called out. "Patsy, Laura, Jean, come on outside. Come and get your dessert." She always made sure the children had their ice cream before any guests were served. The men understood this and continued to talk as they stood to themselves. It was also understood that there was never to be any liquor served or drunk at the Ford home, but they were free to light up their cigars. That's why there was a haze of smoke hovering over their heads as they puffed away. Mr. Jones even knew how to blow smoke rings. Doug stood and stared as he watched him tilt his head back and send circles of smoke into the air. "Here, Doug," his mother nudged him. "Take this bowl of ice cream inside to Mrs. Clark and tell your sisters to hurry up. I'm not going to wait all evening." Patsy, Laura, and Jean trailed behind him when he came back out. They were quiet. "What's the matter with you girls?" May Ford asked as they lined up beside her, still not saying a word. "You feel bad that you didn't help your brother with the ice cream this afternoon? Is that why you took so long to come out and get yours? Is that why you girls are so quiet now?" "But Doug didn't ask us to help," Patsy explained in a low voice. "He shouldn't have to ask for help. You know we make ice cream every Sunday," their mother replied. She spoke sternly as she looked each girl square in the eye. "Don't let it happen again. You help your brother next time." "Yes, Mama," the three girls each answered their mother. She handed them their bowls, each with a scoop of ice cream. "Now scoot." They hurried off back into the house to eat at the kitchen table. "And Doug, this is for all your work." Doug's face broke into a broad grin as she handed him a bowl almost overflowing with ice cream. "Enjoy your dessert, son," she said, smiling. He took it over by the side of the house, opposite to where the men stood. He sat down on the ground. After she served the men, May Ford left them to their talk. It was union talk. That was the word Doug heard over and over again. Union. The men talked about workers joining to get better pay and better working conditions. "I'll believe it when I see it," his father said. "I'm telling you," Mr. Clark said, "I believe it. Times are changing. At least they are with some of the new unions. I've been hearing a lot of talk. These white fellas behind the auto unions that started up this year, it's not going to be like with the Teamsters. They want to open it up to everybody. Colored men will be able to join their union." Mr. Chambers interjected. "Won't that be something?" "This'll be our chance to get some of those good factory jobs," Mr. Clark continued. Mr. Jones broke in. "I could even go over to the Ford plant and apply..." He cut his sentence short and cut a quick glance over at Douglas Ford. Doug's father had finished his ice cream and was packing tobacco into his pipe. He looked up from what he was doing and spoke. "Jones, you go on and get a job at Ford's if you want to. But you know as well as I do that I pay more than they're giving out at that plant. And I pay you more money than any union's going to get you too. Much more. But you go on. Lots of guys around here just waiting for your job." The men fell silent for a long while after that. Doug was still sitting and listening over by the house. He wanted to hear more. He felt like one of the men. But his stomach was full and his arm ached. He dozed off. When Doug woke up, his father was talking again. "Well, I've been down there to that Teamsters Union Hall. They know my face by now, and they aren't letting any colored truckers in their union. Ford, you don't need that union. You're doing better than the lot of them," Mr. Chambers said. "That's right," Mr. Jones concurred. "Nah, you don't understand. The union would stand behind me. They'd back me up. I wouldn't need Jim Hines if I had the Teamsters behind me," Douglas Ford explained. At the mention of that name, Jim Hines, Doug sat straight up. The bowl that had been resting between his knees crashed to the ground and scattered all around him. His father saw what had happened out of the corner of his eye and rushed over to where Doug sat. He leaned over and said in a low voice, "Don't worry, son. I'll get a broom and help you clean this up." Doug grabbed his father's arm. "Who's Jim Hines, Dad?" "He's a driver's son." "Why do you need him to work for you?" "It's business, son." "How does he back you up?" "Just like I said, it's business. Now let's get this mess cleaned up."
Thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.